There are two words you hear a lot in Welsh tradition, really. That's, one is a word called anuven, which means count. Well, it's a Middle Welsh word which is untranslatable in even in Welsh. Nobody's quite sure what it means. But one of the things it means is the very deep place. It also means the place that is not a place. More colloquially, it's the word for the Celtic otherworld. So it's the place of mystery, the place of magic, the place where spirits live. And the interesting thing about the Celtic imagination or the Celtic take on things is that it is underneath. You reach anuven by going inside and down, not by going up and out. The other word that you find a lot in the tradition is the word awen. Again, it's another one of those words that has no obvious meaning, and lots of phrases are used in all languages to describe it. It's sometimes called the inspiration, sometimes called the flowing spirit. But one of the really powerful descriptions of awen you find in a 16th century text, which it's recounted by an English antiquary. There's a sort of 18th century, it's a sort of 16th century antiquarian who, you get this interesting thing that happens, you know, from 16th, 17th, 18th century, antiquarians are visiting the Welsh, who are this weird tribe. So they'd be, you know, and finding out what do these people believe, you know, because and one of the accounts in the text is a account of a young man who goes to sit on Arthur's chair in Cadair Idris. And there's a great folklore legend about you spend a night on Arthur's chair in Cadair Idris. You either die, or you go mad, or you become a poet, become an inspired bard. And there's implication in the early stories that becoming a bard is the worst of the three options that happens. Because there's a tradition, the young man, the 16th century young man is doing, is tapping into this older tradition that you'll find talked about in Gerald Cambrensis, Gerald of Wales, the tradition of the awenyddion, those who incorporate, those who embody the awen. And Gerald talks about the awenyddion as if they are these mad creatures. They twitch, they do weird things, they jump up and down, they have shakes, they have visions, and they talk, and he's got this rather beautiful phrase, they talk about their lips being smeared with the milk and honey of paradise. Well, beautiful. So what the young guy in the 16th century is doing is trying to become an awenyddion, trying to find that deep root out of which all kinds of life emerges. And what happens to him on Arthur's seat is he has a vision of a medieval man in beautiful clothes with a hawk on his wrist, and the otherworldly figure says to him, "This hawk is the awen. Do you want it? But if you want it, you're going to have to look after it." And as you would, of course, he says, of course, yes. And then what happens to him is the hawk flies into his mouth, into his bowels. And he describes it very, very somatically. You know, that it tears its way into him. And then this hawk in his bowels, in the deepest place of himself, there is a hawk living. A hawk that has to be, it needs to fly sometimes, a hawk that needs feeding, a hawk that needs to kill. So what we're talking about when we talk about these traditions that can seem far away and quite ethereal is actually something that's very somatic, that's very life and death-ish. And if we engage with them, will change us. So what we're going to do with in these 2 days is engage with these traditions from that perspective, to embody, to discover our own relationship to the to this mysterious energy called Awen, to enter, to find our own way into the very deep place that is not a place, that is our true country. And in that process, of course, we will meet, I hope you will meet very good and interesting and powerful things. We will probably also meet some disturbing things. You know, in some ways, what the bards were doing, what they were perpetually doing, really, was finding their relationship to their place in the universe, and finding their relationship to their ancestral dead, and in that way positioning themselves in time. So whatever we do these 2 days, it somewhere comes out of this idea of finding our place, not just in our bodies, not just in this landscape, but our place in the universe. And the stories, the poems, the things that the bards speak about, they suggest to us that we live in a living universe that can talk to us, if we allow it. And that talking to it is not that dialogue is fundamental, they would say, fundamental to human life. But the other thing that they would say that we have to do is honor the dead, relate to the dead. And of course, curiously, so we're in this very, for me, very particular landscape, but in a week's time, we're coming up to Halloween, coming up to All Souls. So we're coming up to the time of the year that where the dead come to meet the living. Now, the dead live in us, of course. They live in us in our memories, but they live in us in living history. And in a certain sense, they're always present, but mostly we're not aware of it. And it's complicated to relate to the dead. You know, if you just think, if you've lost people, if you think of the dead that you have lost, or there's all kinds of complicated feelings. You know, if I sit here, I think of my family. I think, I suppose, in particular of my father. And relating, I don't want to relate to my father, to be entirely honest with you. We didn't get on. We didn't speak to me for the last 5 years of his life. He was always a very difficult man. And yet, he remains my father. So there's something I think what I would encourage us to do in these 2 days is to relate to things, but in as real a way as we can. One of the problems with myth and story is they can take us away. They can either bring us right into the heart of life, into the heart of the universe, into the heart of our ancestry, and deeply empower us, or they can take us away into there's a classical thing in myth about people who get lost in fairyland. And the world passes them by. It's the Rip Van Winkle story. You come out, and the world has passed you by. The world has changed, and you haven't changed. And that is a genuine danger in the world of myth. That actually, you can use it to avoid. Use it to not go into Anuvin, even though you think you're going into Anuvin. Because the point of Anuvin, it is the very deep place. It is the place where the cauldron of inspiration and rebirth is found. And it is the place where you'd find the grail. And the best definition of the grail or the cauldron I ever heard, really, was I can't even remember where I heard it now, it's a negative description. It is, that which does not regenerate is not the grail. So if you touch the grail, if you touch the cauldron of rebirth, you are reborn. Something changes in you. something is catalyzed. There may be nice feelings, but there is also that feeling, exciting, disturbing feeling of something new moving. And the cauldron of rebirth, if we take it literally, of course, also involves death. There's no rebirth without death. So there is loss and gain. Stories, Mabinogion powerfully speaks of that. So part of what we will be doing is, I hope, is touching into that experience a little. As much as we can in 2 days, obviously. The other thing I want to hope you'll go away with is some ways of understanding the Mabinogion, not as a literary exercise, but as a internal structure that can help you to work with your own inner processes. It's a very beautiful, very complicated book. There are, you know, I have so many books in my house describing the different structures and you know, just preparing for this workshop, I've been, trying to consider, well, what's the most useful? I mean, because there are, you know, there's literary analysis of them, there's historical analysis, but I think the aspect of it I'm most going to present, though other bits will come in, is the role or the usefulness in the Mabinogion in helping us to enter Anuvin and to embody Awen. And how the interlocking structure of the stories can help us be with that. I'm going to read you something, which is a little bit from a story in the Mabinogion called Peredur, son of Evrog. Now, the story of Peredur, son of Evrog, is one of the very early accounts of the Grail legend. He becomes Peredur in some of the later Arthurian stories, becomes Percival. But this is an older version, in a way. This is just a fragment of the story. So we've got Peredur on a journey. He came across the fairest woman he had ever seen, sitting on a mound. She says to him, "I know where you're going. You're going to fight the Avanc, but it will kill you. And not because it is brave, but because it is cunning. It lives in a cave, and there is a stone pillar at the mouth of the cave, and it can see everyone who enters, but no one can see it. And with a poisonous stone spear from the shadow of the pillar, it kills everyone. And if you promise to love me more than all women, I will give you a stone, so that you will see the monster when you enter, but it will not see you." "I promise by my faith," said Peredur, "since I first saw you, I loved you. And where would I search for you? When you search for me, look towards India." Then the maiden disappeared after placing the stone in Peredur's hand. He continued to a river valley, and the edges of the valley were wooded, and on each side of the river were flat meadows. On one side of the river, he could see a flock of white sheep, and on the other side, he could see a flock of black sheep. When one of the white sheep had bleated, one of the black sheep would come across and turn white. And when one of the black sheep bleated, one of the white sheep would come across and turn black. He could see a tall tree on the river bank, and one half of it was burning from its roots to its tip, but the other half had fresh leaves on it. Beyond that, he could see a squire sitting on top of a mound, with two spotted white-breasted greyhounds on a leash lying beside him. And he was certain that he had never seen such a royal-looking squire. In the forest facing him, he could hear hunting dogs raising deer. He greeted the squire, and the squire greeted Peredur. And Peredur could see three paths leading away from the mound,
two were wide, the third was narrower. And Peredur asked where the three paths went. One of these paths goes to my court, and I advise you to do one of two things. Either proceed to the court of my wife who is there, or stay here where you will see the hunting dogs driving the tired deer from the forest to the open ground. And you will see the best greyhounds you have ever seen, and the bravest to face deer, killing them by the water nearest. And when it is time for us to go and eat, my servant will bring my horse to meet me, and you will be welcome there tonight. Peredur says, may God repay you. I will not stay, but I will be on my way. The second path leads to the town that is close by. You can buy food and drink there. And the middle path, that is narrow, goes to the Addanc's cave. By my faith, Lord, I will go to the cave. Just close your eyes for a moment. And let yourselves notice your bodies. Notice your position sitting on the chair. Notice your breath moving your body. If you feel uncomfortable, you might want to lie down or something. Just notice your body. Notice the effect of the story. Notice your body's contact with the floor or the chair. Notice your skin's contact with your clothes and the air in the room. Notice the sense of touch. Being touched by the air, touched by the chair and the ground. Being touched by the breath that moves in and out of your body. Getting yourself relax in and down. Noticing the experience of touch, of body, of breath. Noticing also the sound of my voice. So becoming present also to the dimension of hearing. Letting hearing combine with touching. Hearing the world being touched by the world. Being touched by inner experience, hearing inner experience. Hearing and touching. Noticing also the sense of seeing. With your eyes closed, you may just see a grayness or a reddish grayness. Or blackness, or there may be images behind your eyes. Letting seeing combine with hearing and touching as you move in and down into Anuvin, into the place that is very deep. Noticing also your sense of smell. As you breathe in and out, you may notice the smell of the room. Maybe very faint or very strong, depending on your sense of smell. But letting smelling also combine with hearing, seeing, and touching. Hearing the sound of the birds and the wind. And the cars on the road, letting the sounds come down to you, not rising to meet them. Sinking inwards and downwards. Being aware also of the sense of taste, noticing your mouth and your tongue. There may be the aftertaste of tea or water. Or there may be just this sense of tasting the moment. Letting tasting combine with smelling, hearing, seeing, and touching. So that as you move inwards, the world comes with you. the world that touches you, that you hear, that you taste and smell and see, folds inwards into Anuvin, into the place that is not a place, into the very, very deep place. Feeling the gravity and the density of the place as you move in and down. Letting yourself touch ground inside yourself. Feeling your feet on solid ground. Opening to the inner landscape. Which you might see or smell or taste or hear. And touch. Or through your sixth sense of knowing, you may just know you are somewhere else. In the place that is not a place. In Anuvin. And as your inner senses open, you may find you are standing on the edge of a wood. And in front of you, there is a path moving downwards. And if it is right for you, follow the path. The path into the wood. And as you go into the wood, you feel the life of the wood all around you. The path may be straight or it may curve. It is your path into Anuvin. And you may see ahead on the path a strange dog, white with red ears, who seems to be sniffing, finding a way through the forest. It is a wish hound. A hound out of Anuvin. If it feels right for you, you may follow the hound. who will lead you to a mound in a clearing with a tree. Follow the hound of Anuvan. And as you follow the hound, you come to the clearing in the center of the woods. And you feel the wind, the sound of the wind and the rain around the tree and the mound. And from somewhere there is a voice that says, "This is the Mound Arbeth. This is the Mound of Wonders. This is the center." And as the hound leads you around the mound, it is as if there is a shift in time and space, and you find yourself on a spiral way, descending into the mound. And as you descend, there are many images of the living and the dead. From near and far, and there is the sound of water and wind, the deep stillness of earth, and we find ourselves in a cave with a pool of hot bubbling water. And there's a great lamp hanging from the roof of the cave, formed of two dragons, a white and a red dragon, entangled together. And at the place of the meeting, there is a pure white flame. And around the edges of the cave, there are seats. And in this cave, there is a seat that is just for you. And you will find that the hound leads you to a seat in the Mound of Beth. And from your seat and with your hound, contemplate the mystery of the mound. Contemplate your connection to Anuvin. Contemplate the Awen that rises from the pool. Sit with the living and the dead.
Feel this place with all your senses. Feel the cave and the pool and the lamp and the images upon the walls. Feel the hound with you, who is your guide into Anuvin. Breathe in and smell the air. Hear the sound of the cave. Hear the sound of the mound. Taste the air. See it. And gradually now, as you hear the sound of the heartbeat, a drumbeat, feel yourself starting to rise upwards. Feeling yourself move from the very deep to the surface, slowly. Feeling the hound and the mound. Feeling your seat in the deep. Senses orientate outwards. Again, notice the transition. Notice what happens when you move from inside to outside. And then notice again that you're sitting in a group of people. Notice the relationship between the inside and the outside, being on your own and coming into contact. What I would like you to do, if you will, is just to go into some groups of three. Ali's going to sit out with me, but the rest of you can just go into groups of three and just say a little about your inner experience. And it's almost like your bodies take you to wherever you feel drawn to. It's always a difficult bit, this, but just move into contact and express your awen. Speak the truth that is in your own experience.